Caroline Bayliss, and I'm chairing this session, chasing your tail on TPD claims, insights from injury schemes. Great to see that we've got a full house for this session, even though there has been a lot of talk about TPD claims already so far in this conference. I think you'll find this will be a great session. It's a great paper. If you haven't read it yet, I would recommend you do so, and bringing together life and GI, which is probably something that we don't do enough of here, learning from each other. I'll introduce both the speakers now. Bezena Hinton is a director in the actuarial services practice of EY, specialising in life insurance. She's worked in the financial services industry for over 20 years, although she doesn't look a day over 30, and has been involved in a wide range of roles spanning pricing, valuation, claims reviews, experience investigations, group knife analysis and pricing, and everything in between. More recently, Bezena has been involved in a number of LAGIC and ICAP implementations. I'm sure you all know Bezena. She's very active in the Institute. In 2010, she was the president, so only the younger members of you won't remember that. She's currently the chair of the Life Insurance and Wealth Management Practice Committee, and as a member of that practice committee, I can tell you that she's a very active convener and making us all work very hard. Richard Yee is a director also in the actuarial services practice of EY and has worked in the general insurance industry for over 24 years. I don't know Richard so well, so I won't make any comments about how good he looks. And has worked for major insurance and reinsurance companies in senior roles. Prior to joining EY, he set up a boutique actuarial consulting firm for 8 years, which included performing a number of appointed actuary and external peer review roles. He's active in the Institute as well, currently a member of the General Insurance Practice Committee, and has been convener of the 2013 Injury Scheme Seminar and 2014 Catastrophe Seminar Organising Committees. He's also written or co-written 3 papers for the Institute, Rating Motor Insurance, going right back to 1994, Reinsurance Solutions in 2002, and ICRC Other Accumulations in 2013. He's also a board member and treasurer of the Down Syndrome Association of New South Wales since 2012. They're happy to take questions as we go along, so please feel free to do so. There's a microphone in the room, so please feel free to stand there, and if I don't see you, please wave at me. Don't forget to say your name so that we can capture your comments for posterity. Over to you.
Thanks, Caroline. Well, thanks for everyone for coming along today. We've got a lot to cover, and so I do refer you to the paper if you have a chance, if you're interested more in the topic for later. But really, as an introduction, just to say why Richard and I wanted to do this paper today. You've all heard about the recent poor experience in the group market, about $500 million of losses last year, not including what the reinsurers would have lost, and they're not captured in the APRA stats. So we've got a significant driver and a significant issue. So what can we do about it? One of the things that occurred to us is we wanted to see what we could learn from elsewhere. And so we were looking to the GI injury schemes, so mainly workers' comp and CTP, as examples of where we could look to. And we're not saying that those schemes have got all the answers, but we're saying that it is good to look when you've seen these other issues in the past and what has worked and what hasn't worked. And so that's our starting point of today. So what we're going to cover today, the main drivers of the recent TPD experience, so we're going to cover that quite fast, as I know there's been some discussion of that already. Then mainly into product design and how this has been a factor. The influence of unions, doctors and lawyers. Claims management, data reserving, and then what we can do about this, the implications, and some recommendations. So, the drivers. Now, these are really topical, and what we're just going to put forward now are our views on the topic, and we're just going to cover this quite briefly, as I said. So, the first issue we've got here is increased awareness, and I'd like to say that awareness itself is not a problem. It's actually really good, the fact that people are more aware of their cover and are claiming on their cover. The only issue is that insurers have historically assumed that there would be a lower level of awareness than now is in fact the case, and they're priced for that, and so now the claims level that's coming through isn't matching that assumption, and hence that's contributing to the bad experience. So we're going to have to adjust that going forward and make assumptions about different levels of awareness going forward. But why do we actually have that increased level of awareness? There's a few different factors. So superannuation funds have been communicating more with members. There's a whole choice of fund that's been driven the fact that super funds are trying to get more and more members, and so actually wanting to advertise, and there's even been some TV ads and that kind of stuff. So as well as the super funds contributing more, communicating more with members, we've also got the government doing things like the Super Seeker tool on their ATO website. So you can put in your name and some tax details, and it comes up with all the different super funds that you have, like, together with their insurance associated with it. So if you were going to make a TPD claim anyway, you'd be really dumb not to go there and see what else you could also claim on at the same time, and you might as well claim on a lot of them. So there's no excuse now for you not knowing what benefits you have. We've also got MySuper now coming in, and that's got TPD in there as a default, and so that's just more publicity, more awareness, and then, of course, you've got the lawyer issue. And even if you weren't ever going to consider using a lawyer, the fact that lawyers are out there touting for business means that you're just hearing about TPD more, and so aware of it more so in the past. The next item there is definition creep. So we've got weakened definitions over time. We've got tribunals and courts giving more liberal interpretation. And we have eligibility that's been extended to more workers, casual workers, spouses, and an easier at-work test to get through. There's anti-selection. So there's poor risk lives can now get cover without underwriting up to the AALs. And this is the anti-selection factor has been likely to increase over time as well. And because of these high AALs, that's going to also magnify the effect of that anti-selection that's coming through. And that graphic we've stuck on there is from Australian Super. So that was at 29th of March 2014 when I went to the web, pulled that off, 1.5 million cover you can get. And I understand that is going to be coming down, but that's still what was there a few weeks ago. As we touched on before, we've got increased involvement of lawyers in the claim process. And this has come through at the initial notification stage as well. I mean, we've always seen some lawyer involvement when you've got problems with the claim stage, but not necessarily right at the initial upfront stage. And we've also got those lawyers targeting those with TPD cover. So when lawyers had previously assisted a client with a workers' comp claim, they've got those clients on their books, and now they're turning to them and saying, why don't we also see if we can claim on TPD for you? Why not? And the lawyers are also testing current definitions and setting new precedents. The final couple of factors, we've got an uncertain economic environment, so less job opportunities, it's harder to return to work. If you're an employer and you've got someone you don't really want to get them back, perhaps rehabilitate them, if you can push them towards a TPD payout, it's good for you, good for them, win for everyone, except perhaps the insurer. And if you're a worker, if you could get yourself a TPD payout, if you're perhaps you're facing redundancy, then that's good for you too. And another factor there, with this environment, if you're self-employed, your business might be going bad, it's very, very stressful, why don't you go on TPD claim? And once you've gone on claim, if you go on a claim, you've definitely no business to go back to, so definitely can't go back to work there. The final point is social acceptance of mental health issues. It's now much more acceptable to accept help for these problems and to go and seek help, which is really, really good. But one problem with the TPD-style benefits is because you have to demonstrate that you can't be at work for 3 or 6 months, by the time you've waited and waited and waited, you should have been out there seeking help and getting medical treatment in that time period. And so if you've actually waited that long without rehabilitation, there's no chance then of you really going back to work, or very little chance. So given that's where we are, what else can we do? Over to you, Richard.
What can we learn from the general insurance industry? Probably learn a lot from our failures. We've looked at injury schemes, workers' comp, CTP, and we've supplemented that with public liability analysis. We've really focused on these four areas of product design: the definition of disablement, the time limit to making a claim, a variable benefit, you know, your weeklies, definition creep over time. So I just look at those four topics for this moment. The definition of disablement. Each state has its own rules and definitions, so there's no universally accepted permanent impairment definition. For example, Workers' Comp New South Wales has a 100-page booklet which describes what is a permanent impairment and how do you determine that. It uses the AMA guide as an objective basis. The key point here is the assessment is made on an objective basis, focused on what the claimant can do, tries to provide consistent results over time. And being an objective assessment, it has trained medical providers looking at the whole permanent impairment assessment. This potentially reduces any chance of doctor shopping and possibly removes bias from the process. As an example of AMA guide, I've got two brief examples. So for a psychiatric case study, if you want to assess what permanent impairment that person has, you look at a test. You'd maybe have five tests. One is a concentration test. One is how much employability test they have. And you'd work out points based on the test that they can actually perform. You add up the points and you come up with a percentage impairment number. The second example is a hairdresser, for example, who is allergic to hair dye after washing someone's hair. And that person, you know, would represent maybe a 5% whole person impairment test. Generally speaking, a serious impairment would be a 15 to 30% range. So just to give you a feel for what that means. The time limit to making a claim. Generally, claims need to be lodged for injury schemes within a time limit from the time that you're aware of the onset of the injury, of the disease or injury. This time limit varies for each state and each scheme, but typically maybe 6 to 12 months. Of course, there's exceptions to the rule, and people may lodge claims 2, 3, 4 years away, but predominantly the purpose of this rule is to try and allow actuaries and regulators and scheme managers to get a better feel for that accident year's experience, so you can close off claims as quickly as possible. The variable benefit. Injury schemes are not sum insured based and can vary from $1 to either capped amounts, very large numbers, or even in some cases potentially unlimited. To give you an example of a very large claim, I don't know if you recall back in the late 80s, John Blake, the actor, who was seriously injured in a car accident. I think he starred in the movie Gallipoli. He was billed as the next Mel Gibson. So the loss of earnings for his claim was sizable, resulting in a claim of close to $20 million in $97. In today's dollars, that would be enormous. In general insurance terminology, we are required to model a claim size distribution. I think it's something that is not so prevalent in TPD, for example. It's either zero or the full payout. Payments are made to various heads of damage, such as legal, medical, economic loss, non-economic loss, and expenses. The key point here is the greater the injury, the greater the benefit. If you have some impairment above the minimum threshold, you can still get a benefit. The fourth point here is the definition creep over time. We observed over 25 to 30 years of injury scheme experience. Schemes need to keep changing the rules to keep up with the surges in claims activity coming from all different pockets. As a rough rule of thumb, every 5 years, the scheme may change their benefits. Consumer advocates learn the rules of the game and understand how to make claims. So the rules need to change to counteract that. And this is what we observed. Thresholds need to be tightened. A recent example is in 2012, New South Wales Workers' Comp. The scheme was in deficit to the tune of $4.5 billion. Over 50% of this number was due to deteriorating claims experience. Action was taken by the WorkCover Authority and the New South Wales Government to make legislative changes. Increasing premium rates was not an option. Overnight, the deficit was halved, basically because benefits had been reduced, journey claims eliminated, weekly payments capped, heart attack, stroke claims were eliminated. There's more detail in our paper. Please refer to that and read that at your leisure. But also, these benefits were changed retrospectively. So it just gives an illustration of the power of changing, the legislative changes that could be put through. Refer now to the presenter to talk about TPD.
Okay, we've heard about injury schemes. What is the other side of the box for TPD? So, we don't have an objective definition of disablement. We have a very subjective definition. We use words such as ever and reasonable and likely. So very hard to actually say what they truly mean. The definitions focused on the medical condition itself and the employment potential, but not what the claimant can or cannot do. The assessment of the definition requires a judgment on the permanency of the disablement, which, again, they don't have to have in the injury scheme side. And also, the actual assessment is not necessarily consistent between providers or over time, as it's dependent on the interpretation of the claims assessor or in the judge in the case of the tribunal process. A final point there in terms of the definition is it's potentially hypothetical in terms of occupation, because if you've got a narrow range of experience for the claimant and they've left their most recent employer, then it's very hard to say exactly what they can do. In terms of a time limit, we have no time limit. So that is an issue for us, as we're all seeing right now. In terms of the variable benefit, we have an all-or-nothing style approach. So either you qualify for your sum insured or you don't. We don't allow for any of those grey areas in between. And it's really, really hard because there are so many claims that fall into that middle category. And an example that I've seen was the case of a 63-year-old panel beater, and he was obese, and he'd had a knee injury. So he'd had his knee injury, he had surgery on his knee, he totally recovered. But by the time he'd had the surgery and done the recovery, he'd been off work for a year at that stage, and then that's when he was 63, that's that time, perhaps only 1.5 years left of his working life. Now, at that stage, he wrote on his claim form, "I'm retired now, I don't want to go back to work." The insurer wrote on the claim form, "Oh, this employee, he may injure himself if he goes back to work. It would be we couldn't possibly take him back. It'd be in his interest for him not to come back because we wouldn't want to take the risk that he re-injures his knee again." And so you're the insurer trying to assess his claim. You get the occupational physician. The occupational physician recommended 6 different jobs to this guy, but he came up with reasons why none of those jobs could possibly be suitable for him in terms of his education, training, experience. So this claim ended up being paid out. And you have many claims in this situation where it's is he really TPD? I mean, in terms of the definition, maybe, maybe not. Or is it just that he wasn't able to find another job, or they thought he wasn't able to find another job? And that's one of the difficulties we have. And if you consider this particular case and what it would look like through a workers' comp lens, I think you get a totally different picture, because in that situation, the claimant was clearly medically recovered and would have been able to return to work even if he didn't have another job lined up at that time. So some of our problems are because we don't have any room to make any kind of judgments. And perhaps this guy, maybe he would never have returned to work because, you know, he was old and obese and things like that. So maybe it was the right thing to pay him out. But we don't have any room for those kind of judgments. We either have to decide you get the whole sum insured, and I can't remember whether it was a high or a low one in this case, or you get nothing. We have to think of other ways forward for those kind of claimants. And the last point, in terms of definition creep and sustainability, we've actually been quite lucky in TBD. We've had good experience over the last 20 years, and we've had improved benefits. But we have just suddenly seen this turn around, and we really need to think what is sustainable going forward. And I don't think, unless we change our benefits, it will be sustainable. So we really need to put that on the table, look what they've done on the injury scheme size, and reevaluate where we are. So as a result, to sum that up, we recommend an objective definition, disablement focused on what the claimant... objective definition of disablement focused on what the claimant can do, and make sure it's consistent in application across all the people who have to apply it. We recommend a 2-year limit on making claims. We definitely need to have a limit in there, and I think it should be short. A move away from the all or nothing style benefits. We haven't explored into exactly what, but I think we need to look at partial style benefits or income style benefits for those cases where people really aren't totally and permanently disabled. And finally, we need to be able to adjust benefits or readjust them to make sure cover is sustainable. Right, Richard.
The union, the lawyer, and the doctor. These are the three parties who may become involved in the claim assessment process. Each has a different perspective and influence on whether a claim is ultimately paid. For example, lawyers can be consumer advocates, and also they protect consumer rights. Doctors may have a view on the extent of the injury, but they don't have visibility on what the scheme can afford to pay. Unions, well, some unions have made recently headlines for the wrong reasons, but unions predominantly should protect workers' rights. Doctors have influence on the extent of the injury. For example, in New South Wales Workers' Comp, they make use of independent medical examiners. If I just read from the slide here, the information that these are used when information from the nominated treating doctor is unavailable, inadequate or inconsistent, so potentially if they're biased or if they don't give enough information. They're also used if the insurer has been unable to resolve issues after directing questions to the nominated treating doctor. So they're, you know, a mediator as well. So medical panels are important. Assessment, the other feature is assessors of whole person impairment. They're medically specialist trained in the use of the work cover guides for the evaluation of permanent impairment to assess permanent impairment for injuries incurred after 1 January 2002. So these are some of the features that we've seen in injury schemes that could be applied to TPD. Another example is New South Wales CTP. For catastrophically injured claimants, it's probably 40 to 50 per annum in New South Wales. To qualify or to determine if you're catastrophically injured, there's a FIM score. FIM is functionally independence measurement, and it basically works out how well you can live independently and determine if you're catastrophically injured. So there's information out there, and we just want to put that forward as food for thought. Lawyers, the second part is lawyers. As well as spiralling costs in WorkCover New South Wales, there are other examples in other schemes where scheme reform has taken place. The New South Wales CTP scheme in 1999 undertook legislative reform to restrict access to non-economic loss benefits for persons with a whole impairment test of at least 10%. This reduced lawyer involvement. In 2013, the New South Wales CTP scheme put forward draft legislation which would have meant that there would be a no-fault scheme in place. Effectively, it would have reduced lawyer involvement to a very minimal amount. So what we're saying here is, if lawyer involvement is moving away from some of these schemes, where do they go to? Further examples, in the early 2000s, the public liability crisis occurred. This was a combination of poor data, poor underpricing, under-reserving, and increased legal representation. Subsequently, tort law reform occurred in 2002, which led to considerable improvement to the claims experience. The key point here is the reduced workload of lawyers in these classes may have translated into activity into TPD. There can be a linkage between these three groups: unions, lawyers and doctors. Anecdotally, there's a story from a claims manager in our office who's got many years' experience. He mentioned that a union rep was on a mine site and organised prawn and beer nights every Friday night. It just so happens the local lawyer and local doctor attended. The union rep educates the miners that the amount of benefit paid from workers' comp for deafness claims is worth their while to make a claim. Deafness claims are fairly hard to prove anyway. The following week, after the Friday night, there's a flood of deafness claims coming in. Is this coincidence? Now we look at the picture for TPD.
Okay, that's the injury scheme summary. Now look at the picture for TPD. Where are we? So there's a few things you want to draw on here. Firstly, we don't have really good data about the influence of unions, lawyers and doctors, so that's something we need to really get onto and start collecting. We've got some requirements under LPG 270. It specifically calls out you need to collect data on lawyers. And there's also SPG 250 that's come in that requires more data to be collected for pricing. So we do have APRA requiring more data to be collected, and it's important that we think about what data should we collect. Next point, we currently don't use independent specialists for TPD assessment to provide judgments. And I know that for TPD, they do get a second opinion in many cases, but it's not quite the same as those doctor panels that Richard was pointing out to us earlier. Another point is we have seen in some cases that there are some doctors who are overrepresented in the claims data, more than you'd expect by chance. So especially for stress type claims where you know that doctor is the one who will approve that type of claim, so a number of claimants have gone there. It's important we get that data and analyse it and have a look. And we've heard of cases where doctor shopping has occurred, and we'd like to show you an example of this from a potential claimant.
bigger scene than the city. So how can I help you today?
Hello. Well, I pinched my foot a few weeks ago at work. To be honest, I don't think I'll be able to work again. In fact, I don't think I'll be able to work in any occupation that I was educated for.
This is the end. To be honest with you, I've had two other cases like this in the past, and both those cases, the patients were permanently disabled.
Are you serious? I mean, this is like a really bad news for me.
Just look at you. You're totally and permanently disabled. You need to get the full payout from your TPD insurer.
What's your delay?
I injured my foot a few days ago at work. I don't think I'll be able to work again. In fact, I don't even think I can go to my kid's graduation. I'm going to embarrass his friends.
You're looking at it? And my past experience, I think his band-aid is enough.
Are you sure?
You can go back to work tomorrow. Trust me, you can go back to work.
So there may be a variety of opinions out there when you go and see a doctor. Moving on now to the effect of lawyers. We've also seen some increased lawyer advertising, lawyer involvement in claims. And from two of the insurers we've looked at, we've seen increases in lawyer data over the last few years, going from about 15% up to 45% involvement of lawyers in claims. So a significant amount of lawyer activity out there. Now, as part of the research for this paper, what I did is I was Googling TPD claims, as you do, and this is what came up. So we've got adverts here from Shine, Gerald Maloof, Maurice Blackburn, Law Partners and Turner Friedman Lawyers. So it's amazing who is out there trying to get your business. This is how one potential claimant has responded to this lawyer advertising.
I've just hurt myself from a terrible gardening accident and I need to make a TPD claim. But these forms are so difficult to fill out. I probably need the help of a lawyer. But lawyers cost so much money. And what if he can't get me a payout? Then I still have to pay him. Maybe there's somebody on the radio who can help me.
Leech and Garden Lawyers. No win, no fee.
That's fantastic. That means even I could make a claim.
Leech and Garden Lawyers. Don't think you have a chance? We'll buy you a chance.
That's great. That means it's a win for me and my lawyer.
So as you can see, some of these lawyer ads are really effective. Okay, moving on to claim assessment.
That were actuaries trying to be actors. Claims assessment.
I think they should stick to the table.
We proposed a multi-pronged approach to this TPD problem. So we've mentioned, you know, medical and product design and three parties of influence. But now we look at claims assessment. It's difficult to objectively assess a claim by applying a claims definition with subjective elements. The lack of objectivity in TPD makes it more likely there will be difference of opinion and increases the opportunity for conflict when two parties have, generally speaking, your insurer and insured have opposing interests. This section looks at these five areas: objective disablement, work capacity test, changes in the definition of disablement over time, claims leakage reviews and ease of making a claim. Just take the first one, the disablement threshold. The actual thresholds in injury schemes are set with the aim of objectivity. For some states and schemes, we've set out by state the serious injury definitions for the whole person impairment test. And as you can see, it varies across states and it has different years of effect. So New South Wales effective 2012, what that means is they've changed it prior to that. So we're seeing a lot of constant change in these schemes and the definitions also change. For example, Queensland at least 5% degree of permanent impairment, that's a recent addition. We also recognise this is not perfect. This is a definition, this is a guide. Claims functions should also have a pragmatic approach, and that's how they'll be assessed when they apply it to an individual claim. Work capacity test. So once you're in the system, once you're making a claim, determining how much capacity that person has to go back to work. Injury schemes in the more recent times have focused on positive health outcomes and the return to work if possible, especially for those non-seriously injured. In New South Wales Workers' Comp, a work capacity assessment is an ongoing process of information gathering, assessment to inform decisions about a worker's ability to return to work. It considers, among other things, the nature of incapacity, the age, education, skills and work experience, an injury management plan, and importantly, a rehabilitation plan, something I understand may not be prevalent in TPD claims. And also, regardless of those, it's whether the work is available, the nature of the pre-injury employment, and the place of residence. So it's regardless of if they live in a country town, if the work is available, it's making an objective assessment. So the last 3 points is changes in definition of disablement over time. In response to unsustainable cost pressures, benefits and changes are made at regular intervals. I think that's an important point. I think the TPD definition has probably stayed the same almost from time zero. As claimants and consumer advocates become more familiar with the rules, the system has to change to meet that. The two last points, claims leakage reviews and ease of making a claim. In general insurance, claims leakage reviews are becoming more common. Things that we would look at is comparing where payments have been higher than required under the terms of the scheme. So it's comparing actual versus expected for a particular scheme. I refer you to our paper for highlights and more detailed themes, but things in claims leakage reviews would include assessing the people involved, the process, supplier management, and governance. Lastly, the ease of making a claim. That varies across schemes. And just to give you a flavour, in Queensland, the personal injury form, claim form, is about 15 pages long. So some claimants feel very intimidated to fill that form out themselves and employ a lawyer. It's kind of disconcerting that you have a lawyer at the very start of the claim process. So if you make the ease of making a claim a bit easier, maybe it reduces third-party involvement. For each of these areas, now we look at TPD.
Okay, so I've already got off on the slide here the assessment for TPD. So to quickly run through that, we do need an objective definition for TPD. The current definition is subjective. For work capacity test, we have no standard approach that's equivalent to that. So we do recommend that the TPD definition move to do something like define suitable employment along the same lines as for workers' comp. And having a standardised approach to determining work capacity and suitable employment, that will provide certainty to all the parties that are involved. We have seen changes in the definition of disablement over time. Benefits have become more generous. We've got higher AALs, we've got easier eligibility. You now only need to be off work for 3 months rather than 6 months. The any occupation definition has morphed now into any plus education, training, experience, which is a much weaker definition and much easier to fulfil. It's not the same as it used to, so a huge change in the generosity. We've got a more relaxed interpretation of an occupation, and we've also got precedents coming through from the Superannuation Complaints Tribunal. And often the insurer will take into account those precedents when they're deciding whether to debate or decline a claim or not. So all of these factors have implications for sustainability. In terms of claims leakage reviews, or times at looking at where you've been paying out extra on a claim above and beyond the benefit entitlements, that's a great cost minimisation strategy. You might as well only pay out what you need to pay out. So if you can reduce any extra payments, that's a really sensible thing to do, and we encourage that those kind of assessments are made and acted on. Ease of making a claim. I think it's easier for TPD claims than for some of the workers' comp type claims. I think it's easier, but it has to be really the perception of the claimant. And if they don't think it's easier, that's when you're going to be having problems coming through. So if someone thinks that they might want to make a claim and they just don't know anything about insurance, might be scared to even go to the website or ring the insurer, and it's so much easier if some friendly lawyer will take the problem away from them and do it all for them, I can see that would be really attractive. So it's up to us as insurers to try and communicate how easy and friendly we are at claim stage to actually make that process less threatening. Okay, let's move on to data.
The general insurance industry has learnt the hard way that they need to collect more relevant data can provide more confidence in managing your portfolio. There have been a number of failures over the last 25 years in the number of companies becoming insolvent. This has led to the drive to collect better data. In the paper, briefly we'll cover some examples today, but in the paper there's much more detail. General insurers collect much more data at the granular level. We've got a sample list there, and it's not readable, but it's three columns, and the far columns on the right represent the list of data that we collect typically for CTP and workers' comp, and the details in the paper. What it is, for example, some relevant fields that might be applicable to TPD. Collecting things like the level of litigation, legal representation or not. If a law firm is involved, what's the name of the law firm? In workers' comp, details that may be relevant include what's the pre-existing condition, the name and contact details of the medical provider, the Medicare number of the doctor. Lastly, there's the use of free-form data, and I think there's a couple of general insurance actuaries here that use free-form data for mining in the schemes. They look at the file notes of the claims manager, and they look at the text, the free-form text, and you can use techniques to look at keywords to determine if a claim is going to common law or not. How does TPD compare, Pazina?
Okay, so generally TPD is quite limited in terms of exposure data, and claims data has not progressed much either in terms of what's available in a readily searchable form. So those free-form techniques would be good to explore. So we do recommend more data is collected for TPD along the lines that Richard has said, along the lines that's already occurring for workers' comp and CTP schemes. So that includes whether the claim is litigated or not, the legal firm's name and its address, the doctor's name, address and Medicare number, and details of other medical advisors. So this data should be collected for TPD claims.
Reserving. Setting reserves accurately assists in setting a strong foundation for accurate pricing. Consistent under-reserving will result in consistent underpricing and ultimately insurer losses. It's illustrative to look at some examples from injury schemes where under-reserving has led to losses, and what can we learn from this for TPD insurance? For example, New South Wales Workers' Comp recently has been under-reserved. In 2012, major wholesale reforms have taken place. In public liability in the late 90s, under-reserving for HIH meant the whole market was repriced, and at some points people couldn't buy public liability insurance. Although collecting better data can help you perform better reserving, it doesn't solve the problem, especially when there's a step change in the data series. In times when there's fundamental shifts, reserving actuaries must recognise that a new paradigm exists, and relying on the past is not necessarily a guide to the future. This graph here highlights what could be the shape of something that a market can get to. So we have deterioration in the ultimate loss ratio over the underwriting years, hitting a peak of 170%, improved by increased pricing, tort law reform, and better reserving. The point of today's paper is we want to try and avoid this situation. We want to avoid chasing your tail. So,
okay, so in TPD, over the last few years, we've seen the rising claims costs that have come through with recent large increases in premiums and reserves. And it's not clear whether the actions taken to date have been sufficient and the premiums and reserves will be adequate for the amount of late notified claims on IBNR claims that are out there or could be out there, or whether experience will continue to get worse. So looking at this graph here, I think we're somewhere on the left-hand side. I don't think we're at the top. I don't know how far up we are, but I suspect things are going to get worse before we get better until we undertake some structural reform. So what can we do? We need to use the better data we've talked about earlier. We need to try and investigate more. We need to try and monitor the drivers more while we're dealing with this phase of the current situation. And also it's important to recognise that the current methodologies may not recognise step changes in the data, and I do think that that's what we've had, a step change in the data. So if you're using a reserving method that is relying on an ultimate loss ratio, is that ultimate loss ratio really right? And I don't think you can just continue on the past trends, because I think you've got to say there's been a step up there. So you need to really look at your methodologies and challenge them. Right. Implications. So what we've got here is a little summary of where we've been today. So the current TPD product doesn't address consumer needs. So we need to assess as an industry, what is this product actually trying to do? And I recognise that there are a small percentage of people out there who are genuinely, totally and permanently disabled. Something has gone wrong with them. They're never going to go back to work. They are quite seriously impaired. But that's, I think, only a small percentage of all the TPD claims that we're seeing. But for everyone else, those people who fall into that the grey category, who may or may not be disabled or could go to work, and we've certainly seen cases where, for one of the insurers we were looking at, 10% of the people they'd had with TPD claims were back at work within 1 year contributing to the same employer's superannuation fund. And that's only to the same employer, let alone who were actually did change and join someone else's fund. So a large number of these people who are getting payouts are actually returning to work in some slightly different occupation or related occupation. So for these kind of people who have got some kind of genuine issue, but it's not total and permanent disablement as we really want to think about it in the original design of the product, wouldn't it be best for these kind of people to focus on rehabilitation and return to work and how we can actually help them get better and help them, you know, contribute to society again? That's what I really think we need to do. Because otherwise, if we're actually spreading the cost of those people who get this lucky payout, if you like, across everyone else, it's going to become unaffordable. And we talked about the fact that sometimes those superannuation, the insurance premiums can become a too high percentage of people's super contributions. So it's just not affordable. We really need to think who we're covering for what. So what we need instead, have a benefit that's paid out as a lump sum only for genuine need, and make that benefit objective, measurable and a repeatable definition, and set it a real level of disability. And when it's not certain whether someone will recover, pay them an income style benefit or a partial style benefit instead.
Smarter product design alone is not enough. To counter the surge in claims, we also recommend some other solutions. Establishing independent doctor panels to assess claims to improve objectivity. Routinely collect additional and more granular data, such as on lawyer and doctor involvement, to better understand the claims. In addition, interrogate existing free-form data to better understand past claims. And recognise that current data and reserving methodologies may not recognise step changes in claimants' and consumer advocates' behaviour. Thank you.
So thanks for that. That was fabulous, and I do recommend you look at the paper. There's a lot more detail in there. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Well, in the meantime, while everybody's thinking up their questions, Bezena, I was hearing a plea from you for sort of some sort of industry standardisation. Maybe of data collection and definitions and the like. I guess, first of all, have I interpreted that correctly? And if I have, how do you think we should go about it?
I think yes and question is really the short answer to that. It would be great if we could redesign the TPD product. I think where we are now is unsustainable going forward, so we do need to do something different. It would be good to have a new version 2 of TPD out there. I don't have a good answer about how we get there. I think it should be industry-driven, insurer-driven, so I'd like to see consensus and insurers getting together to debate this. I think there's enough pain in the market right now that is a real driver for change, and if we miss this opportunity, it's going to be a long time before it comes again, I hope. But we really need to take advantage of this opportunity now, so I would suggest that if insurers are interested in this kind of idea, they do get together and debate what could happen and what kind of, or get some working parties or representatives from the different insurers to see what would be feasible in terms of a definition. Build on what we've got in GI. It's good stuff out there. It's not perfect, but it's good stuff. Build on that and see what would work in terms of a definition, what would work in terms of some income style benefits, and then put forward a straw man model and see who wants to accept that then.
Hi, Bridget Brown. Thanks for an excellent presentation with lots of really constructive ideas.
Can you hear that?
Oh, you can't hear.
Is it on?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. I just had a sort of a side question, actually, again, to do with connecting these different systems together and the idea of consistency and definitions. What sort of connections do you see between TPD and something like the NDIS going into the future? If any.
We excluded it from our talk.
Well, it's excluded from workers' comp. I mean, it's not a problem for workers' comp and injury schemes, but there must be some crossover with TPD.
Well, we considered it and didn't view it as part of the scope. And I mean,
it's quite different. So TPD is paying out a lump sum benefit in particular circumstances. With the NDIS, you've got the whole scheme of different things. And I think they can be paying different needs in different circumstances. Double dipping is a whole other issue, and we have that double dipping issue already between TPD and workers' comp, because we just had talked about that earlier. There could be a double dipping and overlap between that. And with all our insurance benefits, we look to offset income style benefits, any other benefits. And I don't know why we don't do that with TPD. If you can offset the fact that you've got a serious permanent impairment benefit already from workers' comp, why can't we offset that as well? And same with the NDIS, if you're getting a benefit from that, then offset that rather than paying out twice. Think about what the person actually needs and actually pay them the cover for that gap rather than getting them multiple covers from multiple sources.
Eddie Fabrizio. It's not really a question, it's a comment about the sunset clauses that we've been hearing about, whether it's 2 years or 5 years. I think as an industry, we should really consider the ethical and moral obligations of the insurance industry, where we give people a default benefit which they don't know they got, which they've been charged a premium for, and yet we say you have to put your claim in within 2 years. And I think as a whole industry we should really consider, is that a right approach to that problem, or should we actually be spending more time in making people aware of the benefits they have?
I think that's a good point, and what we probably didn't draw out enough today was you think it should be 2 years from the when you first become aware of those symptoms, so that date of stopping work. So sometimes the disease or illness takes a long time to manifest itself, so it's not from 2 years when that first happened, but 2 years from when they first stopped work.
And that they'll say they're not aware they got the insurance benefit, so it doesn't help.
Well, it's true, and so that's a thing the industry needs to weigh out between the needs of those people who haven't identified within that time period and the needs of the many and the insurers and everyone else to actually manage the risk. So it's let's debate it.
Right, I think we're out of time there. Thank you, Bezena and Richard, for a great presentation, and thank you for the questions. We probably could have kept going for ages on that. Will you join me in thanking Bezena and Richard for the presentation?